Life's issue of 24 April 1950 was the usual potpourri, the wedding of Franco's daughter and a lavish pictorial on the art of El Greco, an analysis of foreign policy by John Foster Dulles, Averill Harriman's new advisor, and a story on Bob Hope's first television show. The magazine looked up from its perusal of these matters long enough to editorialize on the state of the economy. Life liked what it saw. 2 years ago, 4 years ago, the editors wrote, the U.S. was hip deep in a post-war boom, and the news today is that it is still smack in the middle of the same boom. The darn thing goes on and on and on. The writers expanded at some length on this theme, happily cataloging the achievements of American free enterprise. The editorial closed with a cautionary note. Mindless materialism was a growing threat. The life of the spirit, through the arts, science, and religion, was the real point of it all, the editorial reminded. Too many people were forgetting that. Are the American people really coming to value prosperity as a means to the larger good? Life asked. The editorial did not mention poverty. It did not mention that an entire race of Americans was still consigned to second-class status. It did not mention the possibility that prosperity and the larger good were equally unreal to millions. Life was not alone. In that year of transition from the first half of the century to the second, the leading popular magazines, Time, Newsweek, The Saturday Evening Post, Look, Collier's, The Reader's Digest, contained very little about social or economic injustice. The Negro problem? There was a Supreme Court decision in June of 1950, ruling that the University of Oklahoma could not require its one black student to sit alone in a separate part of the dining hall, and that the University of Texas could not claim that the law school it set up exclusively for a black student was really separate but equal, consisting as it did of a single room. But the court did not repudiate the underlying separate but equal doctrine. Civil rights advocates were disappointed, but the New York Times counseled patience. This republic cannot recognize degrees of citizenship, its editors wrote. But as long as considerable numbers of people, including the majority of dominant elements of whole communities, think differently, we cannot expect the millennium. The editorial in the nation's most prestigious newspaper did not ask for a stronger stand by the court or urge new civil rights legislation. Rather, the editors concluded, the situation calls for a period of education. How long a period, no one can say. At the end of the year, the American Civil Liberties Union released its survey of newspapers in 16 major cities, revealing that, although political and academic freedoms were imperiled, there were bright spots. Labor rights, press freedoms, and race relations were in a healthy state. Poverty? Poverty was so far from being a topic of concern that the lack of poverty was said to be creating, if not exactly a problem, at least a challenge. Philanthropists would have to start being more creative in finding useful things to do with their money, wrote the head of one large foundation. Now that most of the crushing burden of relieving destitution has been removed from the shoulders of the individual giver to those of society where it belongs. Two of the scarce references to poverty are instructive. The first was in a small journal, which was at that time well to the left on the American political spectrum, the New Republic. In a 15-page State of the Union editorial, with which it opened the new year, the magazine included a subsection entitled The Lowest Third, referring to the 10 million American families who earn less than $2,000. But the writers could not muster much indignation. The subsection on the lowest third was buried in the middle of the editorial. The word poverty was not used. Aspirations for reform were modest, acknowledging that some of the causes for the condition of the lowest third are beyond the power of any Congress to solve. The magazine asserted only that many of the unskilled could do better if given the chance. The New Republic's prescription was for the president to create a special commission on labor training, a national scholarship program, and a Fair Employment Practices Commission.